Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Cabin up on Lake Wissota. I'm Pat Kreitlow, in for Mike Crute on Devil's Advocates Radio for this Friday getaway day. And we have really had to appreciate in recent, well, the recent years here, Friday used to be a quiet news day. At worst, it was take out the trash day, where once in a great while, if there was something, you know, that somebody hoped would quietly slip under the radar, then the trash would be set out on a Friday afternoon, hoping nobody would pick up on it. And, you know, a good example of that would have been the state Supreme Court decision a couple of weeks back, two weeks ago now, on gerrymandering. 3 weeks ago, I'm sorry, came out on Good Friday afternoon, about 5 p.m. I mean, not to be cynical, but how cynical do you have to be as a state Supreme Court to put out your gerrymandering decision 5 p.m. on Good Friday when a lot of people took the afternoon off? But I digress. It has been take out the trash day almost every Friday for the past few years here. And we're just kind of used to that, decision, now in this day and age.
The Roe overturning, they were planning on releasing that the last day of the session as well. So it was already, even like the biggest thing, the biggest decision of Alito's entire career, they were going to do the same thing, drop it on a Friday and run last day of the session.
It's so inexcusable. Again, this whole notion of, you know, back timing your activity and, you know, then trying to sneak out at the very end with absolutely no accountability for it, is how these things happen. So instead, we get a leaked document about the U.S. Supreme Court, apparently all set to overturn Roe v. Wade. Whether the final opinion will look like this draft certainly remains to be seen. But as you can imagine, it has led to no shortage of reaction from people in one form or another. We'll tell you a bit about, you know, who we talked to at Up North News in just a bit. But I did notice today in the Twitterverse a clip from Fox 6 in Milwaukee. And I know that former lieutenant governor and gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish has said before that, you know, she does not believe in abortion exceptions for rape or incest, but I wasn't sure if I'd ever actually seen her ask directly on camera about it. And that did happen. A Fox 6 reporter did put the question to her, and she was ready with her answer.
Would you have an exemption for rape and incest as well?
No, because I don't think it's the baby's fault how the baby is conceived.
Would you?
So there it is. It's not the baby's fault, of how the conception happens. Clayfish, whose position, by the way, is shared by all the other Republican candidates for governor, then went on to say that her view is rooted in being a woman who has taken pregnancy tests, and that therefore her position is pro-women. She said, quote, "People need to fully understand that we're going to be supporting women, period, end of story." Well, unless that story involves rape, you know, it appears, then not so much. So give folks credit who are at least not trying to play, you know, cutesy with their position. If they are pro forced birth, if they are essentially for, you know, men to impregnate anybody on demand and, you know, have the government tell you you have to just keep it that way, at least they're telling you, you know, they're, and part of that is the confidence that comes through gerrymandering. When you know you either live in a red district or a red enough state, or that if you can gin up enough of your base, you'll win, yeah, you're much less likely to temper or you know, moderate your positions. You can come right out and say no exceptions for rape or incest, but, you know, again, it's going to get a few other people jazzed up as well who may not necessarily agree with you. And I know, Brian, by the end of this, you know, long week, I'm sure a lot of folks are starting to think, much like COVID, much like anything else, they, you know, they want to move on, looking for some other topic. I mean, after all, look, a million people have now died of COVID. It was hardly marked this week at all. But I think it is important as much as possible, especially in an election year like this, Something like this can't get talked about too much.
Yeah. I had an interview with Annalise Eicher, and I was asking her about, you know, how it was a day after, you know, the leak. And I was talking about, you know, political ramifications, or should they go and go with a congressional bill to go and codify, you know, Roe v. Wade, you know, that type of thing. And I was like, yeah, but let's wait till the midterms. Wouldn't it be great to run on that type of thing? And she goes, that's a really nice privileged way to look at it, because for some people, they don't have the privilege of waiting. And
right.
I need to echo that sentiment as well to anybody who's like, well, I'm just tired of talking about this. Well, guess what? It's here. It's here and now, and it's very important. It happens to affect over half of the population.
Right. We talked earlier. Well, we talked on Wednesday night on the Up North podcast to friend of the show, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, an OBGYN in the Green Bay area, who is also the legislative district chair for the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And she explains that a wildly simplistic view of abortion has shaped the circumstances that have gotten us to this point. She said too many people in positions of power have feelings that are similar to Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who implied in arguments about this case that the existence of safe haven laws, where new mothers can surrender an infant without legal consequences, have alleviated what Barrett called the burdens of parenting and make abortion protection less necessary. And Dr. Lyerly said, I don't know what world she lives in, but that is not how it works in the real world. It has nothing to do with just not wanting a baby. The reasons why women pursue abortions are all over the place, and they include complicated health histories, social histories, economic situations, the aforementioned rape, and health issues that prevent a woman from being able to carry a pregnancy to term. And the only way to take care of these women in a thoughtful and necessary way, said Dr. Lyerly, is to individualize their care. And that's the opposite of what will happen if a decision like this comes down. So if Roe's overturned, the state immediately reverts to being treated under an 1849 law that outlaws all abortions. The topic has come up that maybe that 1849 law, because it hasn't been enforced for half a century, there is a legal doctrine out there that State Attorney General Josh Call said he might try to, you know, test out in court, that says, you know, this hasn't been enforced for so long, you just can't anymore. That's fine. Again, it's good to look for all the various options, but the best option of all is to not have people in positions where they can make these kinds of decisions on behalf of, you know, the entire population of women.
May I say, isn't it great that statewide elections are really hard to gerrymander? Because could you imagine if not Josh Call was in there, if Brad Schimmel was still there? Could you imagine if a Republican was in the AG's office right now? Then you'd really have a threat. You'd really have some issues there.
Oh, without a doubt. And I've said that plenty of times, that thank goodness you can't gerrymander a state. Now, obviously, you know, states can tilt one way or the other, but as has been proven time and time again, when the voters show up, Wisconsin is a slightly Democratic state when you look statewide. With gerrymandering, as I've learned firsthand, it's easy to create districts any which way. I am, for those of you who want to know my true claim to fame, I'm the one responsible for the gerrymander of 2011 of congressional districts, because I was dumb enough to declare that I was going to run against Sean Duffy in April of 2011. And they hadn't finished redistricting yet. So a couple of weeks later, imagine my surprise when the new congressional district maps came out and they had so carved up the 7th and the 3rd districts in many different ways. They brought the line up to, but not quite around my house, but cut out all the rest of Chippewa Falls and put that in the 3rd district. You know, so under the old district, we wouldn't have had to put up with Sean Duffy for that many more years. But again, you can't gerrymander a state, but you sure can in these districts. And it's that balance that is the only thing keeping us from either having even more problems or fewer, if we could just get, you know, more state-based elections. Julie from Minneapolis is joining us on the phone. Julie, nice to have you here.
Oh, hi. Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. So, you know, I'm kind of for this idea. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks, but I was online. I noticed that they are going to have a candlelight march. There's going to be two different marches that I saw. One is going to be a candlelight march to the homes of a couple of the justices, and then there's also going to be another march and protest. You know, they may not get closer than a half a mile from their houses, but I don't think that's so bad. You know, when I brought up that idea to someone, they said to me, well, that's violating their privacy. You should never go to a judge's house. That's just wrong. And I thought, wow, 100 million women are having their bodies invaded, you know, and 100 million women are being told what to do with their bodies, and that's not violating their privacy. So I'm not totally against the idea. Whether or not it'll do any good, maybe it won't, but I'll tell you, as we sit here in Minnesota, we're going to have people from North Dakota, South Dakota, and Wisconsin. And I don't know if you can address this or not, but I've heard that abortion is going to be a felony in Wisconsin. So I was just wondering if you could clear that up or if you could discuss that.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Julie. Appreciate it and good to hear from you. And it is something that, Rebecca Clefish talked about in her interview, saying that she hoped for it. She prayed for it, knowing that the 1849 law, criminalizing abortion would come back on the books. To the notion of protesting at people's houses, I'm going to say that I'm not going to tell you that I have a blanket opposition to it. But I will say, as somebody who's been a public figure for most of my adult life, either as a media person, you know, TV anchor, then a legislator, candidate, what have you, it's not necessarily the kind of thing that I would like to, you know, expose my wife and children to because of, you know, what I do. Having said that, obviously, that is part of the risk you take in being a public figure, that you are that much more publicly accountable. To this day, I still get stopped in the aisles of grocery stores or, you know, at restaurants if I'm out for a fish fry, because people feel like they can't approach you. Like they can say, Pat, you know, what's the deal with this topic that's in the news? And they know I'm going to set down my drink and I'm going to explain to them where I'm coming from. They'll know where I'm coming from. They know that, you know, they may not agree with everything that I say, but that I will not lie to them when I tell them, you know, what I think of this issue or that. That's not the same as a protest, but I would think that if somebody were to come, you know, to my house or to somebody else, you know, some other public official's place, that again, what you're looking for is that respectful conversation. I'm hearing what you're saying. You hear what I'm saying. This isn't really that. You know, this is when you talk about a candlelight vigil, I think that is probably the most peaceful way to go about involving a public figure's actual private residence, because rather than, you know, hearing yelling, screaming, speeches and whatnot, I think that display of candlelight can be extremely powerful. It is just that way of affirmation. It gets into what I've always said about yard signs. And, you know, political consultants loved to say, yard signs don't vote. Well, that's a bunch of bull, especially here up north. And I'll try to remember to tell my Tommy Thompson, Donald Trump story about this in just a bit. But basically, if you don't have any signs out, especially here up north, and there's nothing but signs for your opponent, that tells an undecided voter that's quite a boost of affirmation that, okay, this person has all this support, this person has none. And I think the same can be said with that candlelight. Wherever you choose to hold it, to do it, it shows a sign that we may be quiet, but we are not alone, and we will use our voice in even this most visual of ways. I'm Pat Kreitlow, filling in for Mike Crute. More right after this.
Now, for the only thing better than Dove.
Better Dove?
What are you talking about?
Free Dove stuff!
Oh, yeah.
There's nothing on that plate but gristle and fat.